The United States has sparked the biggest ever trade war by activating tariffs on Chinese imports. That's according to China, which has immediately retaliated in kind. While Trump has made much of the U.S. trade imbalance with China, as well as alleged Chinese intellectual and technology theft, is there more to this than just trade? Seen in context of U.S. overtures to Taiwan and activities in parts of the South China Sea that China claims as its own, a wider picture of American efforts to contain a strong China emerges. Join me, Waqar Rizvi, as we discuss the beginnings of a possible and painful trade war. Joining us for tonight's discussion are the editor of Culture Wars Online magazine, Mr. E. Michael Jones, who is joining us live now from South Bend. We're also joined by Professor of International Economics and Finance at City University, Professor Keith Pilbeam, who is joining us live now from London. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. Professor Pilbeam, I'll start with you. What do you make of the American tariffs on these Chinese goods and the retaliatory tariffs that China has placed on American products?
Well, as an economist, we know this is a very bad thing. And Trump has started it. And it's contrary to WTO regulations and laws. So Trump is saying, you know, this is the new American policy. And I don't like the WTO framework. Because you don't just pick on individual countries when you're in the WTO. And so it's a direct attack on the Chinese. And of course, the Chinese are going to not let this go by. And who could? But of course, they're very concerned and they don't want it to get out of hand. So at the moment, every time Donald Trump does 34 billion worth of tariffs here, they'll do 34 billion back. But it's a very dangerous thing that he's embarked upon.
And Mr. Jones, what do you make of that? Is this as dangerous as it seems?
No, I don't think it's dangerous. I think that we're seeing something that is inevitable here. Okay. Let's take a step back here. The oligarchs in Europe and the United States created this situation in the first place. In 1975, the oligarchs, the G7 countries, met at Chateau Rambouillet in France, and they created what Helmut Schmidt called new geographies of production. In other words, they were going to outsource all of their manufacturing or most of their manufacturing or a good part of their manufacturing to China for one reason, and that was cheap labor. They wanted to exploit the cheap labor of China, okay? And that's what they've been doing now for over 40 years. Now, over this period of time, we have a situation that's very similar to the whole situation of, let's say, proxy warriors that the United States has been involved in. The United States created proxy warriors in Afghanistan to get rid of the Soviet Union, and these people took on a life of their own, and now they're known as ISIS and so on and so forth. Same thing happened here. The United States created a Frankenstein here by creating a huge manufacturing power, a huge manufacturing base in China at the expense of its own country. The leverage buyouts of the 1980s were the implementation of this idea of Chateau Rambouillet in 1975. Basically, they decided to buy these companies, load them down with debt, they go belly up, they go out of business, doesn't matter, the financiers in Wall Street make a ton of money, and the manufacturing is going to go to China anyway. So as a result, the country of the United States of America was more and more impoverished over this period of time. There's no question. And finally, the American people woke up with Donald Trump when Donald Trump addressed this situation. And he's right. There was an element of economic injustice here. The American worker paid for this transfer of power to China. And now Trump is going to do it. He's going to undo 40 years of carefully interacted negotiations with one Twitter burst. This is the problem here. It's not that there's fundamentally what he's doing is fundamentally wrong. You can't undo 40 years of work with a Twitter with one stroke of the pen. You're going to have chaos as a result of that.
Okay, so Professor Pilbeam, do you agree with that? Do you agree that there is economic injustice? Because many people, of course, have spoken about that, the trade imbalance, for example. There's also talk, Professor, about the fact that China is alleged for intellectual theft, technology theft, etc. Did this need to happen? Possibly not in this fashion, but it needed to happen in some fashion.
Yeah, well, it's a negotiating tactic with Donald Trump, isn't it? He sort of plays very tough to begin with, sees what the reaction of the opposing party is, and then he sort of can gauge roughly where to go with the next bit. So he's quite a good negotiator in that sense. Look, just because you've got a deficit with a country doesn't mean you have to have trade sanctions against them. I mean, you're actually buying goods from them that you actually want. So you don't have balanced trade with every country in the world. That would be crazy. We would have about a quarter of the volume of trade. So, for example, Britain, we don't have to have balanced trade with Germany. You know, we import more than we export. But if we export more somewhere else than we import against another country, then it all sorts of balances out. So you can't just do it against a single country and think you've got to have balanced trade. It's just nuts. It's not proper economics.
Okay, so now, Mr. Jones, you had mentioned, Mr. Jones, earlier that there will be chaos because of the fashion in which Trump has approached this through Twitter and otherwise. Do you think that the Trump's base, his political support base, will stand by him? Because at some point in time, this will hurt their bottom line?
Well, it depends on which group you're talking about. I mean, I was recently in St. Louis, across the river. They've opened a steel plant. So there's 1,800 people now working at that steel plant that weren't working before. The automobile industry is a huge industry in the United States, and they will profit from this type of thing. Agriculture will not profit, okay? They're going to suffer because the tariffs are going to hurt them with the export of food. So it's going to depend on who you're talking to. Which part of the base are you talking about? I'd say in general, just judging from the reaction here, I think that the people who supported him still support him. That's the sense I get.
Indeed, Professor Pilbeam, from what I was reading today, a report base still supports him, though they are nervous about his tactics. What do you make of that, Professor?
Oh, well, what we've just heard is, of course, nonsense. Look, if you raise the cost of imports, then people have got less money to buy other goods. So you created some jobs for some steel workers by blocking steel, but then you're putting other people out of work, because if manufacturers have got to pay more for steel, then they can't employ so many people. Your car exports are going to suffer, and people have got less income to spend on other things. So this is one of the oldest fallacies in economics. So tariffs, we know, are bad. That's it. That's the end of the story. And they may create some jobs, but they destroy other jobs. It's as simple as that. You're taking income away from people because the cost of imports goes up. They've got less money to spend on other things. So someone else loses their job. So yeah, you create some jobs in the steel industry, but then people in the car industry lose their jobs because the exports are too expensive. If the steel costs too much, then companies have got less to invest because they've got to pay more for their steel. It just doesn't work like that. You create some jobs, but you destroy others. And what we know is you destroy more jobs than you create.
Mr. Jones, how do you feel about that? Things obviously will become more expensive, won't they?
Well, let's back up here now. What we're talking about is the classic split here in economics. My English colleague here is defending the English system of free trade, which was always mendacious. It was never an honest system. And whether it was or it wasn't, the United States was created as the opposite of that system. Our system was protected manufacturers. This is the system that when you say tariffs are bad, this is preposterous. You're not talking to Americans. You're talking to the English who ran that free trade racket. They were the ones who came up with the idea that tariffs are bad. If you talk to the Germans of the 19th century or you talk to the Americans of the 19th century, they understood that tariffs were absolutely necessary to protect the nascent manufacturers in those countries from predatory English free trade, which basically would flood your country with cheap manufacturers and turn you into a third world colony, which is what America didn't want to be anymore.
Professor, how do you feel about that? Because again, Trump would argue, as Mr. Jones has said there, that he needs to protect his own manufacturing, he needs to protect his own industries.
look, the statistics show that since the Second World War, when we've got tariffs down, living standards have gone up, and countries have become more open to international trade. These are facts, all right? Living standards have improved tremendously because of international trade. You get more products than you can produce domestically. You get better varieties of products as well. You know, you can import good quality steel from Germany, maybe not so good, but a lower price point from Italy. So product variety is very important. You can't produce all those product variety yourself. I mean, if America, let's look at the car industry. I mean, your three car industries went bankrupt, basically. Whereas the Japanese cars were doing very well, did very good sales, this making good profits. But consumers wanted those Japanese cars. That's the simple fact. They weren't buying the American cars because they preferred the price point, they preferred the quality, and they preferred the you know, the servicing of these vehicles. That's simply the case. That's what happened. Now, you know, in recent years, the car industry in America's turned around, partly because of huge government subsidies, and partly because they started to improve, which is good. But that's competition for you. The idea that you just wanted to keep General Motors cars, and, you know, and Ford and whatever for the U.S. market is just crazy.
Mr. Jones, I wanted you to respond to that because, you know, Chinese products are obviously cheaper than American-made products, at least at this time. Now with the tariffs, we'll have to see exactly where the price point becomes. But do you think that American consumers will, again, stand by the president if things become more expensive?
First of all, let's get some economic facts straight here. The lowest price is not the best price. Okay, simply because you can get something cheaper from China doesn't mean that that's a good idea. Because if you have to put the people here out of work in order to buy the cheap junk from China, you're not better off. And I don't know where this professor lives, but he doesn't live in Indiana. And people are suffering here in Indiana. That's why they voted for Donald Trump. There are certain segments of the population that make out like bandits with this free trade charade. And there are other people who suffer. Well, the people who suffer are in the majority now, okay? That's not a good sign, and that's why Donald Trump is in office. This has been the case in America ever since its inception, okay? We are a country that is based on protected manufacturers. That's the way it is. That's the American system. That's what made America a great manufacturing country. That's what made Germany a great manufacturing country. Now, when the English saw that Germany had surpassed its economy, they couldn't compete. It's not that it wasn't competition, it was war. Lord Grey and Winston Churchill lured Germany into a war because they knew that the free trade was a failed idea and that Germany had surpassed them with protected manufacturers. And that is the story of the entire 20th century. England fighting wars for this free trade racket.
Okay, I don't want to get too far off topic. Professor Pilbeam, I wanted to go back to you and ask you, Professor, in the context again of China and the way that Trump has handled this situation with the tariffs, what would have been a better approach? Because certainly something needed to change. As Mr. Jones there mentioned, for example, in Indiana, people are suffering, have been suffering, and that's why they voted in for Trump, because he promised to protect them.
Well, there are different ways of dealing with the Chinese. Look, no one denies that intellectual property theft has been something the Chinese have been doing for years. We all know that. But there are rules in the WTO that you can take them, you know. This is what you do. You don't go threatening people with tariffs knowing that they're going to retaliate because that is what they're going to do. So there are other ways, and sometimes it's better to be cooperative rather than confrontational. But I must go back, you know, the idea that Americans are suffering because of lower prices for foreign goods, it helps the poor people in America, right? If you can get cheaper food imported, it's typically the poor people. If cars are cheaper because they're imported, well, it's the poor people that benefit, okay? They can't afford maybe cars at $20,000, but they can afford them at $10,000. You buy the imported one, it's the poor people that benefit, right? So this is just basic economics. Trade is good. We all do trade. It works for individuals. We trade. I sort of specialize in economics, and I earn some money and spend it and buy products off people. And it's the same for countries. It's not a zero-sum game. It's positive for both parties, both the exporting country and the importing country. And the WTO has reduced tariffs dramatically. We've tried to tackle non-tariff barriers as well. And it's generally led to improved living standards. I mean, look at those flat screen TVs that all the Americans watch coming in from Korea. Cheap, huh? Is that bad? No, they're enjoying it.
Yes, it's bad.
Oh, it's bad, is it? Yeah, so how many of them? Go and ask them to give up their iPhones.
It's bad because the Americans aren't manufacturing them. They're working at Walmart. They're making minimum wage at Walmart instead of making industrial wages by making their own TV sets. Yes, of course it's bad.
And it's produced abroad in China. And I like Samsung phones as well. I don't use one. And many consumers like those. Try and take them off them. If you don't like international trade, take those goods off them. Because these are very much the result of international trade. And I see every day people enjoying their phones. So don't tell me that trade has lowered living standards. It's just nonsense.
Go ahead, Mr. Jones. Do you want to respond to that?
It's flat screen TVs.
Yes. Yes. First of all, as Friedrich List would say, what's more important, the apple or the apple tree? Okay. If I can get you cheap apples from China, okay, that will allow, and then you can cut down your apple tree because you don't need your apple tree anymore. That sounds like a good deal in the short term, but what happens when the price of apples goes up and you don't have an apple tree anymore? This is the argument for protected manufacturers. This is not economics. This is English ideology. This is the English ideology for dominating the rest of the world. We know that now, okay? Americans used to know it, and they lost this idea when they inherited the British Empire. But now that's over. We're in a new era now, okay? First of all, China has enough productive capacity to basically service its own market now. It's got over 1 billion people. That's a big enough market for anything. In addition to that, China has a rail connection between Shanghai and Rotterdam. This is the end of the influence of the American Navy, which is the successor to the British Navy. Leviathan can't blockade these ports anymore, and so therefore the Mackinder thesis is been fulfilled. It's over. We have to come to grips with this new situation instead of constantly rehashing the cliches of the failed English free trade system. It's over. It failed. The people don't want it anymore.
Professor Philbin, I'll give you the final word. We have a minute and a half left. Go ahead.
Well, what we know is you specialize in what you're good at. And American companies are very good at research, development, high-end products. They're the top. And that's what you do very well in. You've created some fabulous companies, multinational companies that benefit from international trade. Look at the S&P 500 companies. Most of them are global multinationals doing huge amounts of trade. Do you really want to destroy these companies and their shareholders? Because that's what you do, international trade. So you specialize, it's basic economics and things you're pretty good at. And you're not so good at manufacturing, I'm afraid. You're pretty good at services. Hollywood movies, they sell around the world. You're pretty good at many things. And you've got to shift over time. Look, we could have all stayed in agriculture back in the 18th century and not moved, but you've got to move with the times. And American companies have done remarkably well through globalization. And their shareholders, and that's the workers for those companies as well. Huge intellectual property royalties flood into American companies. Your overseas earnings are excellent. So it's not all doom and gloom for America, but it will be doom and gloom if you go the way of Donald Trump.
All right, we'll have to leave that as a final word, unfortunately, gentlemen, but of course we do appreciate both of your contributions to tonight's discussion. That was Professor Keith Pilbeam, Professor of International Economics and Finance at City University, who was speaking to us live from London. And we were also joined by the editor of Culture Wars Online magazine, Mr. E. Michael Jones, who was speaking to us live from South Bend. And of course, viewers, we appreciate you joining us as well. Until next time, good night.